The content of this program is intended for the blind and print impaired audience. This is Avra Lewis from the NC Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Ebony and Essence magazines. Today's first article is Minneapolis Police Station Set Ablaze, CNN Crew Arrested on Air. A police station in Minneapolis was set on fire Thursday night, according to local news outlets. The turbulent scene comes days after protests erupted in the Twin Cities, stemming from the tragic murder of George Floyd. Video captured from the 3rd Precinct Police Station shows protesters entering the building as fire alarms and sprinklers are triggered by the activity. They chanted George Floyd's name and the rallying cry, "I can't breathe." According to Fox 9, Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey had police evacuate the building prior to any significant damage. The 3rd Precinct stands in close proximity to where George Floyd was killed on Monday. On Twitter, the city of Minneapolis advised anybody in or around the area to retreat, saying, "We are hearing unconfirmed reports that gas lines to the 3rd Precinct have been cut and other explosive materials are in the building." The city warned, "If you are near the building, for your safety, please retreat in the event the building explodes." Frey explained that he made the decision to sacrifice the building out of concern for both the officers and the public. Frey also asked for assistance from Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, requesting that he call in the National Guard to protect lives and stem the ongoing violence that was brought on by the city's delayed decision to charge the officers involved in Floyd's death. Hennepin County prosecutors claim they need more evidence. According to CNN, the state police arrived on the scene of Minneapolis Police Department's 3rd Precinct in the early hours of Friday morning. They stood protecting the site that was set ablaze hours earlier and cautioned anybody near the scene to move away. CNN cameras were there documenting the event, and 3 of their staff were arrested for, quote-unquote, violating police orders. Omar Jimenez was handcuffed on live TV. Producer Bill Kirkholz and photojournalist Linnell Mendez are reported to have also been arrested and released. Roughly 500 members of the National Guard arrived in Minneapolis by Friday morning. They are now tasked with restoring order as prosecutors deliberate on whether to bring murder charges against George Floyd's killers. The next article is titled, "Joe Jackson's granddaughter was stabbed 7 times by her white neighbor." Joe Jackson's granddaughter, Yasmin Jackson, was stabbed 7 times by a white woman. On Sunday, the 25-year-old Jackson posted photos of her face and neck wounds on Instagram. Jackson said the woman, who is her neighbor, started chasing her and stabbing her because she's a quote-unquote nigger. Jackson was attacked near her Vegas apartment complex, said she couldn't move her neck and is thankful for the people who jumped to her rescue. "I pray to God that if you have any kind of hatred in your hearts towards Black people, that you heal it," Jackson's caption read. "I didn't deserve this. Nobody does. Oh, and by the way, I'm still proud to be Black." According to Jackson's post, the woman was initially charged with felony battery with a deadly weapon. but Jackson updated the caption to say her attacker was booked for attempted murder, battery with a deadly weapon, and a hate crime. The preliminary hearing is scheduled for this month. Jackson is reportedly the daughter of Giovanni Jackson, the love child of Joe Jackson and Cheryl Terrell. Giovanni wrote about her relationship with the Jackson family patriarch in her book. Giovanni also posted her daughter's injuries on Instagram. "My daughter has a good heart and has dedicated her time as a nurse to help others. She did not deserve this," the concerned mother wrote. On Jackson's GoFundMe page, she admitted that the incident has left me extremely traumatized, and I plan on breaking my lease and moving out of those apartments until I'm mentally prepared enough to move on my own again. Jackson's grandfather passed away from pancreatic cancer in 2018. The next article is titled, "A Look at Fashion Brands, Responses to Police Brutality and the Black Lives Matter Movement." Protests have spanned the country daily following the killing of George Floyd on May 25th by Minneapolis new former police officer Derek Chauvin, as the Black community and allies took to social media to spread the word and demand justice for Floyd and countless others. Breonna Taylor is another name among the list of Black lives lost just the first 6 months of 2020. Many began to look at large fashion brands who are heavily supported by the Black community to take a stand. Regarding influencing culture, it is these brands with hundreds of thousands to millions of followers, with hugely diverse customer bases, with connections to individuals in high power positions, that are among the few outside of political officials that hold the utmost influence in times like these. Perhaps to not much surprise, many brands fell short, late, or altogether completely silent regarding police brutality and the fight for basic human rights. Some have released generic, almost empty statements, and some have spread awareness in a way that feels more authentic and promotes action. Tuesday, June 2nd, both individual Instagram users and large brands were spreading blank posts of only a black square in observance of Blackout Tuesday, while a collective effort to encourage everyone to focus on what matters versus their own self-serving content, the movement is now facing backlash for flooding Black Lives Matter or BLM hashtags on blank posts, effectively wiping the hashtags clean of valuable information and resources for taking action. This is a telling and powerful movement for the Black community. As responses have trickled in, internet users have taken to social media to discuss where and where not to use their Black dollars and which corporations are seemingly not worth supporting anymore. The conversation has inspired people to share a list of Black-owned brands to support instead. The argument of whether or not community even needs a statement from these large corporations has been a debate. Silence or only reaching after pressure from social media is a stance of opposition in itself, some have argued. But still, the influence of these companies cannot be denied. The next article is titled, "Jackie Aina Says You Should Be Able to Name More Than 5 Black-Owned Beauty Brands. Beauty influencer Jackie Aina has always used her YouTube channel, where she has over 3 million subscribers, to highlight Black-owned beauty brands. According to Aina, by now everyone should be able to name at least 5. On Tuesday, Aina created a Buy Black-owned thread on Twitter, and it shows just how knowledgeable her followers are. Black-owned thread, Aina tweeted, "By now, everyone should be able to name 5 minimum Black-owned indie beauty brands besides Fenty Beauty and Pat McGrath Labs. Anya added. And according to the thread that has since retweeted over 6,000 times, they are well over five. McConnell blocks resolution blasting Trump's treatment of protesters. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell blocked a resolution seeking to condemn Donald Trump after federal officers used tear gas and rubber bullets against peaceful protesters in order to clear Lafayette Square near the White House. According to The Hill, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer introduced the legislation via unanimous consent, giving one senator the power to block it while issuing a challenge. If a senator objects, they should be asked if they believe Americans do not have the constitutional right to exercise the freedom of speech. Do they support president's use of tear gas against people, including families who are peacefully protesting in a public park, Schumer said. Trump drew widespread anger when the park was cleared just so he could visit St. John's Church. Bishop Marian Edgar Budd of the Episcopal Diocese of Washington slammed Trump for the action. He sanctioned the use of tear gas by police officers in riot gear to clear the churchyard. I am outraged, the bishop said earlier this week. McConnell, however, claimed that the resolution did nothing to address the racial injustice in the country or end the unrest. It pays more attention to the precise ways that federal law enforcement affects presidential movement around the White House instead of cities that have been consumed by rioting, looting, violence against police for several nights in a row, he said. There's no universe where Americans think Democrats' obsession with condemning President Trump is a more urgent priority than ending the riots or just advancing racial justice, McConnell said. Then McConnell introduced his own resolution, which called for order to be immediately restored to the cities of the United States so that all citizens may have peace and legitimate grievances of peaceful protesters may be heard and considered. The resolution did not address the treatment of protesters, and Schumer blocked it, calling it insufficient, according to The Hill. The next article, Anastasia Beverly Hills is donating $1 million to support Black-owned businesses. With a nationwide call to support the hashtag Black Lives Matter movement and other initiatives centered around eradicating racial inequality, Anastasia Beverly Hills, ABH, is pledging $1 million towards the fight against systemic racism, oppression, and injustice. The cosmetic brand shared the news to Instagram yesterday amid hashtag Blackout Tuesday, a day created for those who work in the music industry to disconnect from work and reconnect with the Black community. The call to action was beyond show business and reached beauty companies like ABH, who blacked out an Instagram post in solidarity. Anastasia Beverly Hills has already donated $100,000 across organizations like Black Lives Matter, the Innocence Project, the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund, Black Visions Collective, and the Marshall Project, and is discussing internally new initiatives that will financially support Black-owned businesses and artists in the beauty industry. We vow to remain constant and vocal supporters of equality, the brand wrote in an Instagram post. We vow to use our platform and our privilege to amplify the voices of marginalized groups that deserve to be heard. Thank you to our community for being a continued source of inspiration and accountability. Hashtag Black Lives Matter. Moving along to the next article titled, How COVID-19 is Affecting Mental Health Practitioners. The global coronavirus pandemic has brought toughness for all of us, to say the least. The first The further the virus has spread, many of us have had to grapple with the loss of loved ones, causing anxiety and fear across the nations and masses. And in the wake of the trauma faced, therapy has been an outlet that many people have had to turn to help ease the feelings of uncertainty and worry. In fact, preliminary research on coronavirus in China showcases high rates of mental health issues, including depression, anxiety, insomnia, and distress, which are major issues in nurses, women, and those on the front line. The unsung heroes of the front lines include those who are not just preserving our physical health, but our mental health as well. Unfortunately, they have far too often been overlooked throughout the entire crisis. Therapists are facing a constellation of unique challenges in the face of COVID-19 pandemic that far too often we don't recognize. But the better question is, how will it impact their long-term mental health needs? And how will therapists and mental health practitioners be able to help us if they're not also helping themselves? Dr. Amanda Falk, LCSW, LICSW, Partner and Chief of Clinical Services, The Dorm, shares how COVID-19 is affecting mental health practitioners and why it's important to recognize, explore, and process. Burnout and compassion fatigue. Extraordinary times call for extraordinary measures, and these unprecedented times are considered extraordinary and then some. But of course, if the general public's individual feelings of anxiety and worry have increased, it's not surprising that this would happen to mental health professionals as well. But they must be aware of putting on their own oxygen mask before helping others. In typical times, some studies show that between 21 and 61% of mental health practitioners report moderate to high levels of burnout and compassion fatigue, says Falk. These numbers are exacerbated during an international pandemic as clients in a state of acute stress and in need of heightened levels of support. Symptoms of burnout include emotional exhaustion, depersonalization, lower self-evaluation, sense of personal accomplishment. Compassion fatigue is emotional and physical exhaustion leading to a diminished ability to empathize or feel compassion for others. Burnout and compassion fatigue negatively impact a practitioner's capacity to be impactful with clients and are emotionally draining on the practitioner, him or herself. Vicarious trauma. Feeling compassion and empathy makes us human, but the same characteristics that we love our therapists to have is the one that will cause them the most detriment. According to Falk, empathy, attunement, and emotional availability can make a therapist vulnerable to feeling a client's pain in complex and profound ways. She continues, vicarious traumatization is the transformation in the self of a trauma worker that reflects from empathetic engagement with traumatized clients and their reports of traumatic experiences. Indirect exposure to a traumatic event through the firsthand account for narrative of that event produces a trauma reaction in the therapist. During COVID-19 pandemic, there has been a surge in trauma-related diagnoses and symptoms. Practitioners are seeing a surge in clients suffering from acute or ongoing trauma in their practices and organizations. Thus, therapists are more prone to vicarious trauma. Blurred boundaries between personal and professional life. In a therapeutic encounter, A therapist is always mindful of maintaining a professional stance, both to protect the client and themselves. If a client knows too much personal information about the therapist, the information may interfere with the therapeutic process. For instance, if a client needs to work through an unresolved conflict with his or her mother, he or she may turn the therapist into his or her mom. Transference. If the therapist discloses he or she has three cats and the client's mom was allergic to or hated cats, this disclosure or entry into the therapist's personal life will disrupt the transference and the potential opportunity for the client to work through his or her unresolved relational issue. As therapy has shifted to a virtual world and clients are literally entering the homes of their therapists through a computer screen, it is more important and more difficult than ever to protect our personal lives and space. Therapists are facing the same crisis simultaneously. Therapists are human, says Falk. Did you know that they would be exempt from the same personal crises that we are all currently facing? Think again. The next time you're on a Zoom call with your therapist, therapists are not immune from anger, fear, anxiety, says Falk. So make sure that you are offering grace as well. The overall mental health impact their patients are suffering from as a result of COVID-19 pandemic, she says. That said, it is the responsibility of a therapist to take care of him or herself and process all therapeutic interfering feelings and emotions so they do not negatively impact the therapeutic experience of the client. While therapists may use their self and personal experiences to inform the process, their self should not be used to control the process, and the therapeutic experience should never be about the therapist. Lack of face-to-face contact. While technology has been an invaluable therapeutic tool during this crisis, in a virtual treatment encounter, it is more difficult to pick up on and read nonverbal communication and body language, says Falk. Nonverbal communication is often relied on heavily by clients who are unable to or uncomfortable with naming or describing emotions. Without an ability to see and interpret nonverbal communication, therapists have been challenged in the virtual treatment landscape. Therapists must be mindful of their own mental health state during these times. However, Falk offers a few tips for managing your mental health while you're helping to manage others. Regular individual clinical supervision, group supervision, and case conferencing with peers, continued professional development and education, self-care in the form of meditation, mindfulness, yoga, exercise, aromatherapy, journaling, personal therapy, and self-help groups, scheduling 10 to 15 minute breaks between sessions, creating boundaries, communicating with family, and make plans that protect your private work time to ensure kids, spouses, pets, etc. don't walk in on therapy sessions. The next article is titled, Exclusive: Meet the Genius Women Behind Black Girls in Trader Joe's Movement. If you ask anyone that frequents Trader Joe's, they can probably spout for hours about how the latest snacks they picked up, the newest spice blend they're sprinkling on everything, or the new must-try ice cream from the frozen food aisle. For years, Black women have been having those conversations too, just not on a large platform. Two Black female Trader Joe's lovers from Cleveland had an idea that changed all that. Their names are Lauren, aka Lowe, a 27-year-old human resources professional, and Mercedes, aka Dee, is a 34-year-old esthetician and mother. The Cleveland natives originally met on social media and later bonded at a dinner party Dee hosted.
When I worked in retail, my job was right by Trader Joe's. That was a frequent place I would go for inexpensive lunch, Dee told Essence of her initial love for the grocer. I was always trying new things, and that's kind of how I fell in love with Trader Joe's. And I just started cooking and started my food blog, Cornbread Fed. I love hosting people, which is how Lo and I met. It just kind of grew on me from there. As their friendship grew, Dee and Lo would bond about food and trade items after Trader Joe's haul. Dee and I both followed social media pages dedicated to Trader Joe's, and I didn't see a lot of brown hands on those posts, Lo remembers. The idea to start a TJ's page dedicated to black girls began to dance in her head, and Dee was immediately on board. I woke up in the morning and we had a conversation and it just went from there, Lo said. I just can't believe how much it's grown. When it comes to growth, the Black Girls in Trader Joe's page is the movement we didn't see we needed. In 2 weeks, the page pulled in an impressive 50,000. Dee and Lo were stunned at the numbers, even noticing an uptick of 5,000 new followers in just one day. Building the brand has been a baptism by fire, says Dee. We kept calling each other like, are you seeing this? It happened organically, and that's all of the black women promoting something they believe in and love through word of mouth. The BGITJ Instagram page is not only dedicated to the store's vast food selection, but also serves as an mouth-watering recipes you can make with their own unique ingredients. This milkshake using TJ's purple yam ice cream and blueberry lavender almond milk is bound to be your favorite new summer treat. This is just some of the food inspo that can be found on this wildly popular page, which is still climbing in followers daily. While BGITJ currently exists as an Instagram-only platform, Dee and Lo are planning to expand their brand with an official blog and merchandise. I think it's important that we are seen and we can recognize each other, whether it's in a pin, button, or t-shirt, says Dee. We've been afforded that sense of community from social media, which is amazing because now we can be all over the county and still feel a sense of community. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Ebony. We hope you have enjoyed it, and be sure to listen again next time. I am Avery Lewis, reading for the NC Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for the blind and print impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, www.ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138, 919-832-5138. So long until next time.